we have Jason Berrickman on monthly. He's a state senator, and he was talking about this thing that just passed through the Senate. Now goes to the House. It's it was a partisan passage through the Senate to redistribute money to schools throughout the state of Illinois, taking from the wealthy and giving to the poor, basically, is what they're proposing here. Now that you have it in the House, how much do you see this changing? How much are you going to tweak it?
I think there's a lot of scrutiny that will have to go into this. As many know, the House has had a task force for some weeks, a few months now, studying this very issue. And so we will take what we've learned in those hearings and apply it to this bill and see what we can do. I think it's not 100% accurate to depict this as taking from the wealthy and giving to the poor. There are many school districts that would lose money under the plan that came out of the Senate that would not be called wealthy. Certainly, they're better off than a lot of the schools in Illinois. From my point of view, I think a much better thing to do would be to identify schools that are underfunded, and there are many, many of those, and find a way to fund them. Let's not diminish the quality of education in the schools that are doing well to lift up the quality of the others. Let's find new money to pump into those schools to make them better.
We have a couple of school districts here in Bloomington Normal. One is Unit 5, and we talked to the superintendent yesterday, Mark Daniel. And he said, under the legislation that he's looking at right now that passed in the Senate, his school district, and they're just, I mean, they're dealing with very little now they're getting from the state. He said they would lose over $8 million in state funding. And if they
right,
did that.
That's exactly my point. I'm sorry. You know, it's exactly my point. That's not a rich school district. It's a school district that may be doing better than some of the school districts 20, 30, 50 miles out of town. And admittedly, because of low assessed valuations in some areas, property taxes are simply not sufficient. That has to be fixed. We have to find a better way to do it. But the better way is not to take from Bloomington schools or other schools to give to schools that need the help. We have to find another way to help them.
Mark Daniel and District 87 schools getting by with very little and doing a pretty good job of it, spending money responsibly. We were talking, I think it was Jason Berrickman said so much that he sees the situation with his, he was one that called it a bailout for the Chicago Public Schools, and that they are irresponsible with the way they're handling the money that they do have. So you're punishing responsible schools.
Right. Well, there's no question about that. I'm not sure it's correct to depict the Chicago Public Schools as irresponsible. Certainly you could go through their budgets and find places that there would be savings. And I wouldn't call it a bailout for Chicago schools either. Chicago schools have their problems just like schools in central Illinois and southern Illinois and rural Illinois. However, we need to have a balanced approach that makes sure that every school district in Illinois has what they need. If, as in the area I live in, 90-plus percent of the school budget comes from property taxes, so be it. In other areas of Illinois, they can't make the ends of their schools meet their budget balance simply with property taxes. We have to find another way to do it. But if we take it from school districts that are property tax better off, then their schools won't be as good as they have been. So it's not a good idea to dumb down education in some places to improve it in others.
If you were to cut $8 million in funding for Unit 5, I imagine that Unit 5 would be asking for property tax increases to help subsidize that or help take care of that cost. Illinois is already the highest tax when it comes to property taxes. People can't take it anymore.
I think that's a correct statement. And so we've passed several bills in the House that might freeze local property taxes, but then you have to be careful for what you wish. And so if you freeze property taxes for municipal government for schools, How will they make ends meet if they need to, if they need to find the funding? Referenda don't do too well much of the time. And so we have a responsibility in Springfield to make sure that kids in every school district in Illinois have a fighting chance for a good future. And we should not pit North against South or wealthier school districts against poorer school districts. We need to find something other than a one-size-fits-all plan, something that says to each school district, what do you need, and let's see how we can help you.
Talking with State Representative Lou Lang out of Skokie, what's your thought on consolidation? We had the local paper here did an editorial on consolidation and quoted, I can't remember the source, but how many millions and millions and millions of dollars could be saved if some of the school districts, especially in the Chicago area, where you've got elementary school districts, separate elementary school districts leading into another separate high school district, consolidate some of those?
I think these are things that have to be talked about, and surely there are some savings for local taxpayers. But you have to watch out for two things. First, you have to watch out for the fact that in the process of consolidation, you don't make those school districts so large that they're unwieldy and make it impossible to govern. Second, you have to make sure that each has an appropriate tax base so that people are not overly taxed, but that they have sufficient funding to run their operations. For my point of view, it seems to me that consolidation where possible is a good idea, but I do not think it should be forced by Springfield. I think we should find incentives to convince local school districts that it's in their best interest to consolidate. So where I live in Skokie, Illinois, there are five or six school districts in Skokie where we have about 65,000 people. Some think that's crazy. Maybe it is.
It is crazy.
What we ought to do is find, what we ought to do is find a way to convince them to consolidate rather than force them to consolidate. We can do that through certain capital projects, through certain financing techniques, and make it impossible for them to say no. So we should make them an offer they can't refuse, as they say in the movie.
There you go. So this back to the piece of legislation that passed in the Senate, and the House is going to look at it. Do you see it changing greatly, or will we see pretty much what's passed in the Senate come out of the House?
I don't think that bill is going to pass in that form. How greatly it will change, or if it's even changed at all and moved forward for a vote, is still to be determined. A bill like this has come out of the Senate before and hasn't moved too far in the House. Yes, there have been some changes since the previous go-around, but there are a lot of people in the House that say, we're simply not going to take certain schools, let's say suburban Chicago schools, and take their property tax base away and send it downstate so that instead of having some very good schools and some very bad schools, what we end up with is a lot of schools that are sort of average. We have to find a way to fund underfunded schools without taking it from the schools that are doing just fine as they are.
All right. And do you think in any way, shape, or form the governor would sign it?
Anyone that knows me knows that the governor and I don't converse very often. So I can't begin to tell you what the governor's plan would be on such a bill. I don't know. I know the governor has not shown a lot of leadership on this issue. He has not come forward with a plan to fund underfunded schools.
All right. Hey,
that's unfortunate.
We're running out of time. One more thing here, because this is something that came out of a House committee yesterday. Democrats proposing $700 million to partially finance some human service programs. Another stopgap measure here because the budget's not being done. And I like the idea of this. These organizations need the money. But when you keep using stopgap measure after stopgap measure, there's no real incentive to get a budget done.
That's certainly the case. It's also the case that while it is clear that the human service network in Illinois has been crumbling and a lot of people have been hurt badly by the failure of the governor to engage in the budget process, we have to make sure that as we pass that bill and as that $600 or $700 million becomes available, it doesn't get stopped in the state agencies. We have to make sure it actually passes through to those who are providing services to the needy, to the poor, to those with mental health issues, et cetera. We don't want that money used for state operations. We want it to go directly to services to people, and we have to make sure that happens.
And we're talking veterans rehabilitation with addiction treatment. We're talking homelessness prevention, rental assistance, $700 million. And that's just going to be a little, put a dent in the problem.
That's true. And additionally, there are hints that when we do this, which would be finishing up the fiscal 16 budget, we have to be sure that this is not the starting point for next year's budget. So when we passed what some call the Band-Aid for higher education a couple of weeks ago and provided, let's say, to Illinois State only 30% of its funding for the entire fiscal year of 2016, there were hints that the governor's position is that that's where he's going to start the negotiations for fiscal 17. In other words, he's going to start with an offer of a 70% cut for higher education, including Illinois State. And that's not a good place to start those negotiations.
Lou Lang, you think you're going to be working into the summer?
I think it's entirely possible. My view is, some share my view, some do not, that all it would take would be the governor to say, I'm ready. And he has been unwilling to say, I want to engage in the budget process. He's been holding us hostage for some political agenda items that he has, and he's entitled to have those political agenda items. We all do. But to hold up the budget for 13 million people, I think, is unconscionable.
Yeah, we brought that up with him. We spoke with him last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, and I think we quoted you, and he laughed, he chuckled. Said, yeah, he's pointing the finger right back at you guys. It's very frustrating for us. As a citizen of the state, it's very frustrating when we hear both sides pointing the finger.
Yeah, don't doubt the fact that we're as frustrated as other citizens. We pay taxes, too. Legislators pay taxes, too. We hear from people in our districts. All we can do is explain to people what we see as we see it. What I see is a governor who has said, I'm putting my political agenda ahead of the budget. And even if he's right about his political agenda, and for the most part he isn't, but even if he was, there's no place being ahead of the people's agenda, the agenda that takes care of the needs of our people, and I think he's failed at that.
But can't we say that about the Speaker of the House? Many are.
No, you can't. No, you can't, because we passed the budget. Yes, it was out of balance, but we said it was out of balance. We said it needed revenue. The governor said, you know what, you're right. We need more revenue in the state of Illinois. But now he won't talk about it until he gets his political agenda accomplished.
Well,
our work.
And maybe they're a little hesitant because we've had an influx of new revenue coming in with that the income tax increase, and we found at the end of that life cycle that Illinois was in a bigger hole than it was before we started taxing people more money.
Actually, that's not a true statement. We whittled down what was about $9 billion in debt that we owed to vendors down to $2.5 or $3 billion. And then the income tax increase expired, or much of it expired, and now we've gone into overtime where we don't have a budget. And courts have been ordering us to pay out some of the budget, and they've been ordering us to pay it as if we still have all of the money from the income tax increase. So every day we go without a budget, every day we're paying out based on court orders, we're overspending wildly. And so it is not true to say that we were worse off after the income tax increase. If we still had the dollars from what was the income tax increase, we would be in a much better place today. We'd have an easily balanced budget and a better way to go. But we don't, and we have to deal with the facts as they are.
All right. With that, we'll call it a day here, but I look forward to talking to you on down the road.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.